The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty, once lost, is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic, born alone in liberty.
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 Liberty. Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner, cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear for your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Chaos in the White House, chaos in the stock market, and the left losing what's left of its collective mind, addled by hatred for the 45th president. Welcome back in to Liberty Nation Radio, a production of LibertyNation.com, and we will play you some of the most recent examples of the left coming unhinged over President Trump as the president doubles down on his tariff regime. This time the tariffs are on China, and we'll talk over Trump's increasingly controversial trade policy with LibertyNation.com economics correspondent Andrew Moran. The president sends another key foreign policy advisor packing. This time it's H.R. McMaster out and John Bolton in as national security advisor. We'll bring in LibertyNation.com managing editor Mark Angelides to discuss whether Trump loves chaos or just wants to rid himself of those who are not on board with his worldview. And LibertyNation.com legal affairs editor Scott Cosenza jumps on board for Talkin' Liberty.
Say what? One more time.
But we gotta start with Say What, the portion of Liberty Nation where we treat you to some of the most wacky, astonishing, and damnable things uttered by politicians and the chattering class. And Donald Trump continues to drive the Washington establishment insane as they flail around looking to deflate the president or get rid of him any way they can. And it's causing so many of the high-profile swamp dwellers to say and do things that would have been unthinkable a couple of years ago. Case in point, Uncle Joe Biden, former vice president, speaking in Miami this week, he decided to voice his apparently long-held wish to engage in schoolyard fisticuffs with the president.
When a guy who ended up becoming our national leader said, "I can grab a woman anywhere and she likes it," and then said, I didn't make a mistake, but they asked me, would I like to debate this gentleman? And I said, no. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Oh, the crowd just loved that. And true to form, Trump responded via Twitter, calling the former VP Crazy Joe Biden and saying that if they did take to fighting, Biden would go down fast and hard, crying all the way. But there have been so many other ordinarily calm voices who are getting more hysterical by the day. Witness the respected presidential historian Michael Beschloss, appearing on the Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC, saying in a rambling diatribe that Trump might actually try to seize the presidency permanently.
One of the ideas that Donald Trump talks about is America first, with this idea that maybe the Chinese will have a sphere of influence, the Russians will have their sphere, we'll have ours. He joked about being president for life. Donald Trump did, said it was a joke. I think we always have to be suspicious that maybe in his mind, this is not such a joke.
From the start, people like Beschloss have failed to learn how to take Trump seriously, but not literally, displaying no sense of humor at all. But then there's the pathetic Hillary Clinton, driven nearly to the point of insanity apparently, by her stunning humiliation at the hands of Donald Trump. Democrats begging her to leave the stage and go home. But in a recent interview, she just kept on with her stumbling, embarrassing display of red hot hatred for the president.
He has undermined the office and used it to enrich himself and his family, disregarded laws, ethical standards. He's crossed into a territory of behavior and actions that are unpredictable, that are erratic, that are undermining the stability of the global order.
Global order. The global order, the very thing people voted against in the last election. Hillary, you know, she's become that character from Saturday Night Live, the thing that wouldn't leave. But then there's the once respectable Jeffrey Toobin, CNN legal analyst, driven crazy by his colleague Alan Dershowitz, the famed liberal law professor. Listen to Dershowitz criticizing the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller on CNN and how Toobin responds.
We should have appointed a bipartisan, nonpartisan commission like they do in England and in Israel to do an open investigation which the public could see about Russia's involvement in elections and how to stop it. Instead of doing that, we appointed a special counsel whose job was to find crimes. Whether there were crimes or not, we still don't know. Collusion is not a crime. Obstruction of justice may not be a crime if the president engages in it as part of his constitutional authority.
How has this come about that in every situation over the past year you have been carrying water for Donald Trump? This is not who you used to be. And you are doing this over and over again in situations that are just obviously ripe with conflict of interest. And, well, and it's just like, what happened to you?
See how that works? If you don't toe the party line and parrot the left-wing view, no matter the issue, you're a traitor to the cause. Partisanship always trumping truth. That is Washington, D.C. And people like Hillary and Beschloss and Biden and Toobin are so addled with hate for this president that they have forfeited any semblance of objectivity and perspective, and their corruption and bias has been smoked out by this disruptor of a president. As Trump might say, sad. Meanwhile, there was quite the dust-up on Facebook this week with word that an organization hired by Trump during the 2016 presidential campaign, Cambridge Analytica, mined extensive personal data, psychographic data is what it's called, on some 50 million Facebook users, forcing Facebook big cheese Mark Zuckerberg to put his tail between his legs.
This was a major breach of trust. And I'm really sorry that this happened. You know, we have a basic responsibility to protect people's data. And if we can't do that, then we don't deserve to have the opportunity to serve people. So our responsibility now is to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And there are a few basic things that I think we need to do to ensure that. One is making sure that developers like Alexander Kogan, who got access to a lot of information and then improperly used it, just don't get access to as much information going forward.
He'll make sure this never happens again. But you know what? It already did. In the 2012 campaign, Barack Obama mined the same data and was applauded for it. Listen to Congresswoman Maxine Waters bragging on it in 2013.
The president has put in place an organization that contains the kind of database that no one has ever seen before in life. That's going to be very, very powerful. That database will have information about everything on every individual in ways that it's never been done before.
So it was fine, heroic even, when Obama mined data from Facebook, but when Trump did it, it's a five-alarm fire, a national emergency. And rest assured, Facebook will use this data mining issue to ramp up their discrimination against conservative voices, something they've been doing more and more with each passing week. But perhaps the most important news of the week might well turn out to be the tariffs Trump will now impose on a number of imports from China. It sent the stock market into a tizzy, with the Dow dropping over 700 points on Thursday alone, proving again how fragile and fearful the market can be. But the head of the White House Trade Council, Peter Navarro, said, "It's about time we called out China."
It's an historic day. This is a fundamental shift in American policy towards China after literally decades of economic dialogue. And, you know, talk is not cheap with the Chinese. It's actually been very expensive, because while we've been talking with them since 2003, they've been robbing our technology blind.
So are these tariffs the right thing to level the playing field with China, which has poured massive subsidies into its export industries and engaged in rampant intellectual property theft? Or will the tariffs kick off a dangerous trade war which will drag down the U.S. economy? We'll talk it over in a moment with LibertyNation.com economics correspondent Andrew Moran. And if you want to find out why the Dems won't win the midterms, tune into our YouTube channel at LibertyNation.com. Go to Watch the News and check out the Dems Axiomatic Failings segment. Don't forget to give us your opinion, too, by commenting and subscribing. We'll be back.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
So first, President Trump imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum, and this week, tariffs on China, which sent the stock market plunging by more than 700 points on Thursday alone. Tariffs in general have been widely criticized by conservatives and libertarians like Andrew Moran, economics correspondent for LibertyNation.com. Andrew, you and I disagree on the president imposing a 25% tariff on steel and 10% on aluminum. But how about these targeted tariffs on China?
I would be opposed to my government subsidizing any industry. In Canada, the government subsidizes lumber, dairy, steel, aerospace, and a myriad of other industries. Because since it ultimately hurts citizens and only benefits a small few and plays favorites, it doesn't level any playing field. Now, on the other hand, if China wants to subsidize an industry that makes something cheaper, then why should anyone outside of China complain about that? If you remember, I think it was in the in 1979, Milton Friedman was speaking at some university, and he was joking that subsidies of foreign producers by foreign governments are a form of philanthropy and aid for others. So that's a good thing for the United States. Now, when it comes to intellectual property theft, it is the private sector that really should be handling this issue. If they believe that another country or foreign business is violating their patents or their trademark or committing some sort of IP fraud, then the corporations are the ones who should investigate the matter and then take the issue to courts and allow justice to prevail. China just announced that it's imposing, or proposing at least, I think, tariffs on about 130 U.S. products. This involves a lot of agricultural products too. Earlier this week, I think it was Scott Perdue, he's the agricultural secretary, and he warned that agriculture in the U.S. is going to take a huge hit by these tariffs that China's going to retaliate with. The biggest export for the U.S. to China when it comes to agriculture is soybeans. So the soybean industry would be hurt by the retaliatory tariffs. And it isn't just China that's responding to the tariffs, it's the European Union as well. I think it was earlier this month, the EU Trade Commissioner, she announced tariffs on oranges. Now, Florida's citrus industry is in a depression. It's been in a depression for years now because of citrus diseases and falling sales and weather events. So if Florida has to compete with tariffs, the market's going to be depressed even more. And then Brazil, which is a growing citrus market that's shooting up exports, it's going to take over Florida. And that's something that the U.S. wouldn't want, correct?
No, it isn't something that we would want. Given, Andrew, that the president has already promised your government up in Canada and Mexico that they'll be exempt from those steel and aluminum tariffs, Is it not becoming clear that the president is using these tariffs as negotiating leverage more than anything else?
It can be extremely difficult to get into the head of President Trump. I've read and heard that argument multiple times of Trump using the tariffs as leverage in trade deals, but I don't know. Who knows? I mean, it could be part of his 4D chess, underwater, blindfolded, handcuffed, backgammon, checkers games. Who knows? All I see is that tariffs are in front of me, and I have to oppose it because it defies basic economics.
Andrea, let's look at trade from a different angle. The World Trade Organization is scared to death that Trump is determined to take down their system by refusing to approve judges for their powerful appellate court, which settles trade disputes. What do you make of the WTO and Trump's notion of marginalizing them?
Well, I read your piece earlier this week, and you mentioned that the WTO is afraid that Trump is going to dismantle that organization. There's a common misconception that if you favor free trade, then you must also favor free trade deals and these organizations that have the word trade in them. That isn't free trade. Why do you need 6,000 pages? Why do you need bureaucrats in another foreign territory to complete a transaction between two voluntary individuals or companies? NAFTA, TPP, the WTO, they're all the antithesis of free trade, considering they only benefit the special few, the cronies, the well-connected, the elite, politicians, all those bad players. Now, presidents unfortunately tend to favor these arrangements. If you look back in the early 20th century, Woodrow Wilson wanted to establish the World Trade Council, but thankfully there were free trade advocates who opposed him deeply on that, and the idea was scrapped. And then Harry Truman wanted the International Trade Organization, but that again failed in Congress. And then you had the U.S. join the WTO. A one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work because each country has its own laws, has its own regulations, has its own standards. And many of these countries, unfortunately, can't fend off the wrath of a crony subsidized billion-dollar entity. As you and I discussed earlier this week, the WTO, there was an interesting case in 2016 between India, the WTO, and the United States. India had its own solar power manufacturing program, but it violated, quote, global trade rules. And the WTO, on behalf of the subsidized green energy firms, the U.S. government had to appeal to the WTO, benefit the Obama's green energy cronies. And then the solar industry in India took a substantial hit. So the poor countries aren't helped in these massive multilateral trade deals. So if Trump wants to have a bilateral trade deal with each country, that's a much better approach than having, several nations in one.
It does seem that a big part of the president's trade plans are the dissolution or renegotiation of multilateral trade deals like NAFTA in favor of the kind of one-on-one bilateral deals between the U.S. and individual countries that you referred to. I mean, it does make a whole lot more sense, doesn't it? Just at a common sense level for the U.S. to use its position as a world power to cut bilateral deals directly with individual countries instead of joining the herd in the multilateral deals?
Exactly. And that's another thing that benefits the cronies, because the longer it is, the more exemptions they can get or the better deals that they can get, and they can find other ways to hurt small business. TPP, it only employs bureaucrats. It's the whole point of the TPP, to have more expansion over jurisdictions, have more expansion of power, and the bureaucrats can rule in the middle of, let's say, wherever the station the TPP offices are. Let's say Singapore, a bureaucrat can dictate to Canada from Singapore. How unfair is that? So Trump should get an A+, but an F for me when it comes to tariffs.
Andrew Moran, economics correspondent for LibertyNation.com. So President Trump has now dumped both his Secretary of State and National Security Advisor. What will this mean to American foreign policy? We'll talk it over with LibertyNation.com managing editor Mark Angelides when we return.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
So chaos seems to be the order of the day in the Trump administration. Rex Tillerson out as Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo in. And now H.R. McMaster out as National Security Advisor and John Bolton in. Those are the two most important positions related to foreign policy. And let's not forget John Dowd out as a member of Trump's legal team wending their way through the investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and Joseph DeGeneva in. Joining us to discuss this seeming chaos at the top of the executive branch is Liberty Nation managing editor Mark Angelides. And Mark, at this point, it seems that Donald Trump either likes chaos or is intent on ridding himself of anyone who's not completely in his corner. Which is it, do you think? Or is it both?
Hi, Tim. I would imagine it's a little bit of both. Specifically from the chaos point of view, Donald Trump is a man all about control, all about being the head of the organization. So when people are a little bit in fear of their positions and not quite sure what's going to happen next, they'll be a little more open to doing what the boss wants. And on the other point, yeah, he's absolutely trying to get rid of the more establishment types. When he first came, took office, he was almost in a position where he was forced to take from a very limited field of advisors and top positions. Obviously, with the executive branch, he can appoint more than anything else. But there was going to be a lot of pushback. So maybe he took decisions and choices that he didn't specifically want himself, but that would be acceptable to leading members of the GOP, etc. And now that he's proven himself to be a very effective operator, what he's looking at doing now is getting rid of those initial redacted choices and putting in people who he knows he can work with. He knows exactly where they're coming from, and there'll be very little wriggle room for them. They'll either be on board or they'll be out.
I love how you term that redacted choices.
Yes.
Pulling on a term that's become very familiar around the D.C. swamp these days. But, Mark, we've spoken of the Jacksonian-style foreign policy of Donald Trump, referring to President Andrew Jackson. To what extent has Trump been true to that Jacksonian notion of projecting American strength while at the same time avoiding the type of foreign intervention or entanglements that have marked American foreign policy for the last few decades?
Okay, well, a Jacksonian foreign policy doesn't necessarily mean that you don't get involved. It means that you don't want to get involved. And so in terms of what he's done in a Jacksonian style, I'd say he's well on board. I mean, there's the value-free foreign policy, where you're looking at international relationships, not based on, you're a good democratic country, or we have a good relationship with you, or you're doing the kind of things that we want. It's purely a transactional relationship. So what's happening is the relationship, the deals that they're going to be doing, is it good for America? That's the key thing. That's the only judgment on whether will we go ahead with this arrangement. Is it good for America? And of course, he's absolutely put American strength first and foremost in his policies. A lot of this $1.3 trillion budget's gone through. A large chunk of this is for the military, not just on defense spending, but also, of course, on pay rises for military personnel, which is great and long overdue. So yeah, in terms of, is he projecting a Jacksonian policy? Yes. Yeah, he really is.
Our guest is Mark Angelides, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, joining us from London. Now, Mark, John Bolton, the new national security advisor, is known as a war hawk, a neoconservative who favored the Iraq war. How is his appointment by Trump consistent with a Jacksonian foreign policy?
Well, that's the thing. You'll have known from John Bolton's many appearances with Fox News that although he is clearly a hawk, he's also very much open to what Trump's doing. And I guess hawks are really divided into two parts. So one, they're the ones that want regime change, which very much seems what John Bolton's after. And there's those that just want to project strength in order to defend. But I'd say how this ties in with the Jacksonian foreign policy is that Trump knows and John Bolton both know that they can work together. It will very, very much placate the hawks within the Republican Party who might not otherwise have gone ahead with a McMaster position. And at the same time, as I mentioned in the article on libertynation.com, he's satisfying the hawks by having Bolton in place, but he's also satisfying the doves because they know that Donald Trump doesn't want to get into an interventionist system. So he's kind of bringing both sides of the Republican Party together on this.
Give us a state of play, Mark, as you see it from Europe regarding Trump's sea changes in foreign policy.
Okay, well, it's been, as a European, I'd say it's been fantastic. I mean, we just have to look at the countries across Europe where the new political parties or the older ones who are gaining a bit more traction than they ever had are all going for a make X great again policy or an X first policy. So in the recent Italian elections, it was an Italy first policy. In the German elections, the AfD, who got over 90 seats from out of nowhere, they were putting a Germany first policy. So it's they're seeing that this kind of policy can be done, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. So I think it's wonderful for Europe. Obviously, the globalists within Europe are not too happy about it because they see it as, excuse me, our organization first, for example, the European Union. But the actual political parties that are gaining traction in Europe, these are all looking at Donald Trump's example and applying it in how they're putting forward platforms to the people. It's an excellent thing. It's very good.
You expect Trump's moves to shake up his team, which has been focused mostly on foreign policy, to extend to the domestic front, most specifically White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, who's also been reported to be on the chopping block?
Yes, I do, as it happens. I don't see this as Donald Trump just looking at, let me deal with my foreign policy wing. He's looking at his, let me deal with my executive wing. And it's certainly going to put people on their tiptoes, making sure they're pleasing the boss. But he's had a good solid year with a huge amount of achievements. So, yeah, he's absolutely going to be looking at shaping up all areas of the White House. And if that means John Kelly as well, then it's certainly possible. Actually, I saw something where Steve Bannon saying that if the chief of staff goes, then he might not even appoint another one because he wants to be a more hands-on manager, much as he's done with his businesses.
Well, that would be a first. But then again, Donald Trump has recorded so many firsts in the 14-plus months he's been president that at this point almost nothing seems to be surprising. Thank you, Mark.
Very welcome, Tim.
That is LibertyNation.com's managing editor and international correspondent Mark Angelides joining us from London. Quick break, and then we're back with Scott Cosenza, legal affairs editor of LibertyNation.com, for Talkin' Liberty.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
And now we have reached the ultimate segment of LibertyNation.com, which we entitle Talkin' Liberty. It is self-evident. We discuss issues which affect your liberty for better or worse. As we are joined by our regular contributor, constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal affairs editor Scott Cosenza. And Scott, it looks like the Trump administration, specifically in the person of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, is on the warpath again against drug dealers, looking to encourage states to mete out capital punishment to nonviolent drug dealers.
Tim, this I think this shocks my conscience, and I hope it would shock the conscience of others. We seem to have had a recession or a de-escalation in the war on drugs generally lately, and this is to say that this is a shift in the other direction is the understatement of the century. What we have here, what I have in my formerly nicotine-stained fingertips, Tim, is a March 20 letter from the Attorney General Sessions to all U.S. attorneys, basically saying to them in legalese, you should start seeking capital punishment for drug crimes, including, Tim, and I want to make this absolutely clear, non-violent drug crimes. So a person who just sold a quantity of drugs to another person, a large quantity, to be sure, but they weren't engaged in a criminal gang where they murdered people or fought over turf, just the simple sale. Now, I think we talked about this once before, but this places all of these state legal level marijuana industry people in the position of now being subject to being put to death by the federal government for their activities.
Well, again, this seems inconsistent with Donald Trump's more sort of live and let live philosophy. He's not big into major punishment for drug crimes. At least he said so during the campaign and has never said anything himself about this really since he became president. But Jeff Sessions is of a very different mind, and so we'll have to keep a close eye on this to see where it goes from here. Yeah,
Tim, just to correct the record, if I might, Trump has now twice said that he wants he talked about it in response to opioid, the opioid epidemic, but he has said, Trump himself, that he wants capital punishment for these drug dealers.
Well, do you believe that there should be a difference in the law when it comes to opioid dealers as opposed to marijuana dealers?
Certainly not. I think that people who sell inanimate objects to other people should not be put to death. I don't think that the Constitution even authorizes that to be a federal crime, much less one that that warrants capital punishment. And what we know for sure about the history of capital punishment in this country is that innocent people are caught up in the system and put to death. And if you think that it's, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, then that's one position. I certainly don't hold that position. I hold the position that we shouldn't authorize the government to kill people because mistakes in that regard are unacceptable.
Fair enough. All right. Targeting one culprit in the panoply of noxious street odors in New York City, a Queens Democrat asked the New York City Council on Thursday to ban smoking while walking. It leads me to wonder what's next.
You know, Tim, you think of some poor guy in New York. He lives in a building where I'm sure he's not allowed to smoke in the building, right? Works at a place where he can't smoke at work, okay? And now he can't even have one on the way to work or the way home. Not to mention the fact that I think we'll all recall the death of Eric Garner, which spanned nationwide protests against the behavior of the New York City Police Department. Eric Garner was accused of violating a tobacco law or a sales tax law by selling a loose cigarette. Don't we have a problem already, according to New York City Democrats, of police harassing people on the street, especially minority people, especially brown and black men on the street? What do you think is going to happen when this, you're just inviting more police involvement into people's lives, and in a way that, what's the appropriate punishment for smoking on the street? We've come such a long way with social pressure against smoking. Smoking numbers are down more dramatically than any public health advocate could really advocate for, just on the basis of all these social pressures and truthful health information. Why can't we just proceed in that regard? Why does Mr. Koo, I suspect that Mr. Koo had, walked behind a smelly person with smoke and now wants to institute their preference in law. And I just find it to be a little skosh totalitarian and not a boon for liberty in New York City.
Yeah, it begs the question of whether the way to encourage people not to smoke is to educate them or to marginalize them, because what they're doing here is marginalizing these smokers. So as you said, they can't smoke at work. They can't smoke anywhere else except outside, we thought, and now they can't even do that. But let's move on to Craigslist, because Craigslist personals and subreddits disappear after a Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act bill in both houses of Congress passed on Wednesday. So tell us about what this is about.
All right. So, Tim, this piece of legislation hopefully will be deemed unconstitutional. It is a piece of legislation that basically allows for Persons who have websites that third parties post information to, like Craigslist, right? Craigslist operates the website, but they don't post the content. You or I or some other guy selling a lawnmower are the ones who post the content. Or in this instance, right, somebody posting for a personal ad, a date or whatever. And what this legislation does is say that Craigslist themselves may be liable if somebody posts something that somehow aids in child sex trafficking. Now, you'd be right, I think, if you thought that Craigslist doesn't want to aid in child sex trafficking. So that the law doesn't require them to have any culpability in terms of intent. And that's sort of one of the many nefarious aspects of this law. You take away any intent element, and then what's Craigslist going to do? Well, they're not getting any money from those personal ads. So why would they continue to do it when they're just facing a massive liability? And so that's why they've shut them all down. And this is one of those things where I think you like, one step thinking, right, is like you like to say. The one step thinking is there are occasionally people who are sex trafficked on Craigslist. Oh, well, let's make that illegal and shut it down. Well, the problem with that is that by taking these activities offline in a convenient way for law enforcement to be able to identify who's posting and what they're posting, now you've sent them into the sort of the back alleys, okay? And it's not easy then for law enforcement to be able to investigate and track these things. The better thing would be to have everybody on one spot on Craigslist, and you could actually look and see, huh, you know, who's doing the dirt here, and then maybe go after them. But that requires a little bit more nuance, and it's harder to sell on the 6 o'clock news when the legislators stand up and said, "I helped protect our daughters today." And in fact, what they didn't do that at all. In fact, what they did was likely damage their daughters and increase the likelihood that these sex traffickers are going to be successful.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, YouTube is at it again, banning more firearms videos days before that big national rally for gun control.
Yeah, Tim, I think that while I love to rail on YouTube, and I'm doing so here, I do always want to have the disclaimer out front that YouTube is not a government entity, and so they're not required to honor our First Amendment. But this is where the sort of marketplace of ideas is now focused on many of these platforms, YouTube and Facebook, and to the extent that they are censorious of opinions that they dislike, I think it's important to bring it to the fore and to call them out on it. And that's what happened here. They don't like guns and gun owners and gun instructional videos, and they're going to do their best, to try to stop it. And if you have a mouthpiece and you can generate some heat on them for shutting you down, maybe you'll get reinstated. But if not, good luck.
All right. And from the archives of the absurd and the climate that we're in, the political climate we're in these days, a Scottish man was sent to prison, although he's now out on bail, for a hate crime for a YouTube video of a dog making a Nazi salute. I mean, you're making this up, right?
I wish I was, Tim, and I just leave it right there. This is what happened in Scotland. It can come here, too. We have to protect free speech.
How are they believing that the dog might then pose a white supremacist danger by having learned the Nazi salute?
I don't know.
I'm serious. I mean, there's got to be a reason. I mean, if it's a person, that's...
Oh, the reason is that it gave offense, Tim. That's all they need, that Jewish people were offended, or they perceived that they were offended, and that's all.
That is Scott Cosenza of LibertyNation.com. And if you want to find out why the Democrats won't win the midterms, tune into our YouTube channel at LibertyNation.com. Go to Watch the News and check out the Dems Axiomatic Failing segment. Don't forget to give us your opinion by commenting and subscribing. And a reminder that this program, Liberty Nation Radio Plus, LibertyNation.com's own podcast, The Uprising, are available to you at LibertyNation.com on demand and from fine podcast providers everywhere. So that is it for this week, but fear not, we'll be back at you next week. Same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying, stand up for liberty. And we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation Radio.